All right, welcome back. It sounded like you were having too much of a good time out there. So, too much fellowship. So, welcome back. And so in our first session, we talked a little bit about the biblical balance that needs to be there. That Proverbs 22:6 is not a promise. It's not a guarantee. It is a warning that says that you as a parent are responsible to jump in the middle of your child's life and get involved in that child's life, directing him and pointing him or her towards righteousness. And we said that that is done in a balanced way with the rod, especially that rod is important early on in life and becomes less important as time goes on, and the verbal input is really key in addressing the heart of the child. And the question that always comes up is, when is a child ready to understand and know the gospel? And that is actually, in some cases, a hotly debated topic among Christians. When is a child ready to understand the gospel, to receive the gospel? Let me read a quote taken from Charles Spurgeon when he said, listen to this, a child who knowingly sins can savingly believe. A child who knowingly sins can savingly believe. This is the reason why I said every discipline event is an opportunity for the gospel. Every discipline event is an opportunity. But it's not going to happen at once, and it's not going to happen in 1 week. Because that child fundamentally believes that they can perfectly obey God. In other words, that child is not in touch with his or her own sinfulness. And they don't realize their own sinfulness and how their own sinfulness makes them incapable of being able to obey God or really please God from the heart. That's why Proverbs 22 and talks about the fact that foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child from the very beginning. It is that ungodliness that's a part of the very heart that somehow has persuaded them that they can obey God. A child who knowingly sins can savingly believe. All right? That's a good statement. A child who knowingly sins can savingly believe. And as you begin to instruct that child, as you see the rebuke side or the reproof side of this balance become more and more a reality in your child's life, then you need to talk about what is it in that child's life that's causing them to disobey. So that they are not just intellectually, but experientially in touch with their own depravity, which makes them incapable of obeying God from the heart. There is an external Pharisaism that's a part of every child. That's there. They think that they can externally obey God and everything's going to be happy, when in reality, that is not the full picture. Now, I mentioned at the end of our last session that what is pictured here on our chart is the ideal Christian home. This is what should be happening. But we realize that we don't have ideal Christian homes. So let's take a look at this for a moment. You begin to see that there are some kids that are raised in a home, and this is increasingly so, I must say, in the environment in which we live now. This hyper postmodern type of environment that we live that looks something like this. The parenting looks like this, where there is lots and lots of instruction and very, very little structural parameters or consequences. This is by far the modern Christian home. It's where the mother says, now, when you do that, you make mommy unhappy. You know what? That kid could care less whether or not you're happy. All right? It absolutely makes no difference to them whatsoever. There has to be some kind of consequence. This is where Proverbs is very clear that if we're not willing to bring consequences into a child's life, then we truly, genuinely do not love that child. There has to be some kind of parameters. There has to be some kind of consequences. Let's go back to Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 15. 29 and verse 15. The rod and reproof give wisdom. We live in a culture today, and it's been so heavily influenced by impressionistic child psychology that we think that if we bring anything negative into that child's life, like corporal punishment, that that's going to harm that child's psyche. In fact, we have Christian books written that are entitled Children Are Wet Cement. Once you make an impression in that wet cement and it hardens, it's going to be that way the rest of their life. When really, from a biblical perspective, children are incredibly resilient. We have to bring negative consequences into a child's life. We have to do that. That is part of our calling. That is part of the wisdom of a parent interacting with that particular child. But let's go back just for a moment to chapter 10 of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. Kids have the ability to be able to bring joy into a home or great sorrow into a home. And it has to do with whether or not they are willing to obey and follow the way of wisdom. Later on, let's go to Proverbs chapter 17. In Proverbs chapter 17, we're interested in verse 25. No, that's not the one I'm looking for. Hold on here. Oh, Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 5. A fool despises his father's instruction, but whoever heeds reproof is prudent. Now, we can't determine whether or not a child is going to wisely follow our instruction. We're just told as parents to give the child wise instruction. We can't force a child to obey from the heart. You may be able, because you're bigger and stronger than that particular child, to force the child to obey physically, but you can't force the child to obey from the heart. This determines that child's own choices, whether or not they're really going to obey from the heart or not. Verse 20 of Proverbs 15, it says, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish man despises his mother. Again, whether or not your child is wise or foolish, ultimately in their actions, you cannot determine. You can't determine it. You can give them consequences for their foolishness. You can give them instructions for their foolishness. But it's very obvious from what the Bible teaches that they can ignore that instruction. They can walk the path of foolishness on their own. However, if they do obey, if they do walk the path of wisdom, that then brings parents great joy. As you see your kids grow up and you see them making wiser and wiser choices, that gives you great joy. We have a son that's going to be married here on May the 14th coming up. So about a month away. And my wife and I are just thrilled about his choice in a future wife. She is just a wonderful young lady who first and foremost loves the Lord with all of her heart. More than she loves our son Jay. And that's exactly the kind of a woman that we've wanted him to marry. and we see him making wise choices like that. That brings great joy to us. So on that day of the wedding, you're going to hear a lot of whooping and hollering coming from California, and that's going to be us, all right? Because we're very excited about what has happened there. That's what brings gladness. You can see in verse 20, a wise son makes a father a glad father, but a foolish son despises his mother. That's the opposite. In other words, he makes the mother sad and doesn't do that which is right and gives in to the foolishness of his own heart. That's really key. Now, the Bible teaches that this particular home that we've got up here in the chart, where there's lots and lots of admonition, lots of instruction, lots of verbal correction in the home, but very few consequences, no physical correction or little of it, no structural parameters or little of it, no training or nurturing or very little of it. That produces, it's very clear, a child in verse Proverbs 29:15 that brings shame to father and mother. Or as Ephesians 6:4 says, such a child is, that child is provoked to wrath or anger. One amazing thing that I learned as a young father was how much, when you implemented structural discipline into a child's life, how much they really liked it. Not initially, you understand, but how they want to know where the boundaries are. They want to know what the parameters are. They want to know where the limitations are. That helps them, and that if they cross over the lines, then there are going to be consequences for that. They want to know that. And when you decide not to do that, and you decide to only give them a lot of verbal input, then that particular child then is left, as Proverbs 22:6 says, to go according to their own nature, which their nature is full of foolishness, and they are going to turn out bringing shame to mom and dad. They're going to be a child that's going to be provoked towards exasperation or anger because mom and dad have basically raised them in a very permissive home. These are the parents that are not willing to bring consequences into that child's life. And you've got to be willing to bring consequences. The rod is key here. This is what ultimately brings wisdom. To the child. Look at verse 17 in Proverbs 29. Proverbs 29, verse 17. It says, discipline your son, and he will give you rest. He will give delight to your heart. Proverbs 29:17. He's the type of a young man or a daughter who brings great joy to their father, to their mother. That needs to be there. That discipline needs to take root. So, let's go back to Proverbs chapter 19. In verse 13, it says, a foolish son is ruin to his father. When it talks about a foolish son, this is a son that gives in to the sinful propensities of his or her own heart. Verse 18 says, discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. The implication is, if you don't discipline him, you leave him at the mercy of his own passions, and his own passions will destroy him. You've got to discipline your son. Too many parents are not willing to do that. This is the permissive home. So, parents are afraid to do anything, in this particular case, that would wound the psyche of the child. So they rarely punish him or her but they're always trying to provide positive reinforcement and good behavior. You know, we reward our kids for everything. Covering their mouths when they sneeze. Oh, here's a candy bar. That's so wonderful. All right. This is the home that there's lots of verbal instruction, admonition going on, seldom any worthwhile consequences for sinful behavior. It's very interesting. Single parent homes where mom is the custodial parent often becomes this kind of a home, this permissive home. She believes children have already suffered enough through the loss of their father, most often by divorce, sometimes because of death. She can't stand to implicate or implement any kind of painful consequences on the child. And as these children grow up, they end up losing respect for their mother. And they actually grow up eventually hating her because she has now treated them as equals from the time that they were little. Since there's no father in the picture any longer. And she pays for it down the line. I've seen that over and over and over again in my pastoral ministry. And that's sad to see that kind of thing happen. Where that kid, this is in a sense a laid back style of parenting. And that really comes from Benjamin Spock. Some of you don't remember Benjamin Spock. You have to be old enough to remember, but clear back to the 1950s. Benjamin Spock was awarded by the U.S. government several hundreds of thousands of dollars, even maybe up to $1 million, in order to do studies on infant chimpanzees and monkeys. And he did studies on spanking these monkeys when they did wrong. Now, Spock was not a Christian. He was a Darwinist. And so as a result of that, an infant monkey was only a half step on the evolutionary scale from an infant child. And so when a monkey would do wrong, he would spank the monkey, and then he'd reintroduce that monkey back into the cage with other monkeys its own age. And the monkeys that were spanked became the aggressive monkeys. They were the ones who, the chimpanzees that would attack and bite and scratch the other monkeys. And they repeated this over and over and over again, and it always turned out the same way. And the conclusion was, if you spank your children, you're going to turn them into aggressive children. And he even predicted that if you spank your children, they're going to be eventual criminals that are going to do harm to other people, have no conscience at all. And during the late 1950s through the 1960s, parents were basically told, and especially Christian parents, don't spank your children. And you'll hear even echoes of that repeated over and over again through psychological studies today, but it's all based on a bad premise. And it's all based upon bad science. Loving, caring, proper discipline never produced a child like that. Never in human history. Hateful, mean beating of a child did. But not the loving, caring use of the rod that the Bible talks about. That's what has to be re-implemented. And so as a result of that, this whole impressionistic child psychology has grown up around this, where now we're afraid to really discipline our children. Should never have been the case. Should never, ever have been the case. There are so many examples that come flooding into my mind, but I don't have time to go back to them. There's another type of Christian home. This is sort of the opposite of the permissive home. This is the type of Christian home that where there is lots of nurturing structural parameters for physical correction, lots of use of the rod, very, very little admonition, instruction, or verbal correction. This is where children are brought up almost in a police state. In the home. This is a harsh home that has a very flat view of Christian parenting. For this home and this couple, parenting is a set of do's and don'ts. This type of home routinely produces an angry, exasperated child. Only this child is, when this child finally is outside of the home, he or she will throw off all restraint and fully indulge their sinful natures. So mom and dad in this home are often very demanding. They're dictatorial with the kids. It's sort of like growing up in a military boot camp. Very little time is given to interaction with the children. The parents are viewed as cops looking for every infraction of the law. And homes like this that have parents that act this way and are heavy-handed, sometimes mom or dad or both come out of very high-demanding jobs, sometimes the military. These are the type of homes on a collegiate level that we see that produces girls with anorexia nervosa and bulimia. Because this is the only thing that they're eating is the only thing that they control in their life. It produces the same type of child that brings shame upon mom and dad. This is the same effect. They grow up exasperated or angry or provoked to wrath because they've grown up in this military boot camp. You're never allowed to question mom and dad. Just do what I say. So the mom and dad spend no time building internal convictions within that child or addressing that child's heart or applying biblical rationales to what that child should be doing or thinking or desiring. None of that is given in this type of home. This is sometimes referred to as the dictatorial home. So you've got the permissive home, you have the dictatorial home, and then you've got a home that looks something like this. And the question is, what has happened in this home? It starts off extremely permissive, but then it becomes an extremely authoritarian home. Sometimes almost overnight. Well, the answer to this question is, this is what happens oftentimes in a home where mom and dad all of a sudden get saved. And now, boom, the law comes down. We have to make up for lost time. Look at all the wrong things we've done in parenting. And then the law comes down. And it's not uncommon for children in this type of a home to wish the parents were back in their pagan days. Life has become miserable for the children. Mom and dad have good intentions, but they are inadvertently teaching their children that Christianity really is a bunch of rules, harsh regulations, and they hate it. And they usually end up rejecting their parents' Lord. This is the new Christian home. Radical, radical things have occurred here. Well, let's go back to what should be happening in the Christian home. What should be going on in the Christian home? And that takes us back to Proverbs 29 and verse 15. Proverbs 29 and verse 15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Number three. The third thing I want you to see this evening is that the use of the rod involves the option of corporal punishment as well as other types of physical restraint and chastisement. Most older parents understand the use of corporal punishment gradually has diminishing returns, especially as that child grows up to be their physical equal. When applied under control, the rod can be effective while children are still younger or juniors. As that child becomes the physical equal in high school, junior high, then this is ineffective punishment. It's unreasonable punishment. That's not something that should be happening. And we find out even in the book of Proverbs that God used a variety of methods to chastise his children. Proverbs' use of the word rod can be taken in Hebrew poetry to be a metaphorical reference to other types of punishment as well. In other words, loving parents can figuratively or metaphorically use the rod when they inflict temporary discomfort on their children. In other forms other than through spanking or corporal punishment. So refusal to discipline one's child when they need it shows that the parent lacks genuine love. That's the permissive home. Go back to Proverbs chapter 13. And we're interested in verse 24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. And that's pretty strong words. Because in our natural thinking as human parents, if we don't spank the child, then we're actually being loving to them. The Bible says it's the opposite. We hate the child because usually a parent who assumes that they're being more loving by not spanking the child is not giving enough credit to that child's depravity. They have a worldly or innocent view of that child that has to be corrected. So a loving parent inflicts temporary discomfort on that child. It doesn't have to be a spanking. But whatever form that takes in terms of discomfort, you never punch a child, you never poke a child, you never slap a child. That should never happen. The Bible doesn't give any credence to any of those things. You never deal with a child in uncontrolled anger. You never do that. You lovingly apply the rod. Sometimes it's physical rod. Sometimes it's a metaphorical rod. But it's intended to bring pain and inflict discomfort on that child as a result of their foolishness and their depravity and their sinfulness. Go to chapter 19. Let's go back to Proverbs 19 and verse 18. Discipline your child. We mentioned this a little bit earlier. For there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. Now, it's interesting that this is one of those cases, rare verses in the book of Proverbs where it's actually stated in the Hebrew imperative. And that doesn't usually happen. Most statements, most proverbs are declarative statements, not imperative statements. This is a very rare Hebrew imperative. The command, discipline your son, is a very strong warning against parental passivity. A child guilty of wrongdoing needs to be chastised in his early years while there's hope for him. And to neglect that kind of needed discipline, may contribute here to the child's death. That's really key. Then go to Proverbs 23. Proverbs 23. Fasten your seatbelts and put your crash helmets on. Are you ready? Proverbs chapter 23, verse 13. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with the rod, he will not die. If you strike him with the rod, you will save his soul from Sheol. So the obvious implication here is children need discipline. They need that. Physical punishment, sometimes by a rod or a stick, is approved by the Bible. But rod can also be used figuratively for any form of discipline that brings or inflicts, if you will, discomfort in that child's life. And the pain that's caused from that may make the parent and the child think that the child's going to die, but that's not the case. The punishment will actually deliver him from death, not cause his death. It's contrary. Delivers him. Why does it say that? Because that child will be naturally left to the passions of his or own, her own heart of foolishness. They'll be left to that. So, when verse 13, verse 14 says, if you strike him with the rod, you will save his soul from Sheol. Sheol is the way that Solomon uses the term Sheol, it means grave. You will save his life from the grave. These are the kind of kids that oftentimes, without the right kind of punishment that grows up to indulge their sinful natures. They get involved in drugs, get involved in alcohol, they get involved in some kind of chemical abuse. And as a result of that, they die young. They die young. Or maybe it's not chemical abuse. Maybe they just don't learn to control their own passions, and they need to do anything that they feel like doing. A big thing in Los Angeles now is teenagers that love to get out in the middle of the night and do street racing. And I cannot tell you how many people have died, not just the teens, but cars that they've hit, pedestrians that they've hit and killed because they just feel free to do those kind of things. Show me a kid that grew up in a home with a proper type of discipline, and you're not going to find them behind the wheel of a car like that. A kid that grew up, however, with godly discipline in their life knows how to discipline their own passions, control themselves. They know how to do that. Children need that kind of discipline. And it's approved by God. That's really key. So, we've got to be willing to use the rod. Now that brings us to the fourth observation we want to make. And that here's the balancing concept. And that is the verbal appeal and instruction becomes more imperative as that child grows older. Proverbs really is full of parental pleas for the son to listen to his father. In chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, there is, in the first 9 chapters of Proverbs, there is repeated over and over again. Listen, my son, pay attention to the warnings. Give ear to my understanding. Follow the way of wisdom. It's almost as if Solomon's son had ADD. All right? I mean, he's constantly saying, listen to me, pay attention. As if his son's... Sound familiar? Solomon's son had ADHD. And you understand, this admonition to verbally make appeals to that child's heart is key because Christian parents are not mere behaviorists. Skinner was a behaviorist. Benjamin Spock... By the way, that's not the Spock of Star Trek. That's the psychologist Benjamin Spock. They're behaviorists. But you understand that lazy parents don't take the time to address the internal issues of a child. and what's going on in their child's heart. You have to teach that child to know his or her own heart. You have to ask that child questions. What was it in your heart that caused you to do this or to say this? And they may not be able to answer you, but the fact that you ask the question causes them to reflect upon that. What is it in my heart? And when we're talking about the heart from a biblical perspective, we're really talking about the mind. The mind and the heart are interchangeable concepts in the Old Testament. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he, right? As he thinks. The mind, it's interchangeable concepts. So it causes a person to reflect upon what's going on in their life. Your goal is to speak to heart issues. And back in Proverbs chapter 2, verses 10 and 11, it talks about a child who strives for wisdom at the urging of loving parents will find that it will enter his heart. Obtaining wisdom requires diligence on a child's part in pursuing God's will and persistent urging on the parent's part. Yet wisdom really ultimately is a gift from God. So having such knowledge from God gives inner peace. It gives inner joy. And a lot of this verbal instruction where you're addressing what is it that you wanted so much that you were willing to do ungodly things or say ungodly things to your brother or your sister or to someone else. What is it that you wanted in your heart so much that became your idol? You bowed down to that idol and you were willing to do that ungodly thing. Get your child to think about that. What's going on in their heart? That builds wisdom in their heart. This verbal appeal includes rebuke, admonition, encouragement, help, entreaty, persuasion, all those great verbal words of action. It is really key. Let's go back to chapter 4 and verse 3 for a moment. Chapter 4 and verse 3. Of Proverbs. This is Solomon's own reflection on being a son. He says, when I was a son with my father, that's David, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast to my words, keep my commandments and live. You see how he is appealing to Solomon's heart. See that? Not just his external behavior. Verse 5. Get wisdom. Get insight. Do not forget. Do not turn aside from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her and she will keep you. Love her and she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. And whatever you get insight. Prize her highly and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a graceful garland, and she will bestow on you a beautiful crown. This is not something that a child naturally goes after, you understand. No matter how smart you think your kid is, they do not naturally go after wise things. This is not in keeping with their nature. They have to be instructed in this. They have to be instructed to value wisdom. And you're the one to do that. I think it's important for you to understand that. Especially in the culture in which we live, where we said that this culture is ruled by self-definition. Everything is self-defined today. A child's got to learn to grow up to say, I don't define myself, God defines me. I don't define myself, God defines me. Now, this is really key. Now, I want you to see this in this particular chart. There's good news to this chart and there's bad news to this chart. I'll give you the bad news first, okay? The bad news is this. No matter how hard you try, You cannot hold on to your authority in your child's life. As that child grows up, you will naturally lose your parental authority. And you can't do anything about that. As that child grows up, your authority in their life diminishes. From the time your child is born, you begin to lose that authority. You can try to turn your home into a military boot camp and control every decision that your child makes, and eventually your child is going to go AWOL. When they get old enough, maintaining tough discipline of your child as they grow older is only going to build resentment in their heart. That's the bad news. You say, okay, now come on. Give me the good news. What's the good news? Well, if you do parenting the way that God says you should do parenting, building wisdom into the heart of your child, as your authority decreases, your influence increases. That's really key. And we said, as parents, we cannot determine a child, but we certainly have a tremendous amount of influence in that child's life, right? If you want your child to respect you in the future and seek you out for advice, then you've got to gradually build into their lives an understanding of their own heart motivations that are critical for godliness. They must be convinced from a young age that you have their best long-term welfare in mind every step of the way. Even though what you're saying to them is hard, even though what you've done in the past is hard, they're convinced of that. Let me give you an illustration. Presidential advisors have absolutely zero constitutional authority. There's nothing in the American Constitution that gives any presidential advisor any authority. Nothing. Doesn't exist. Question then, how much influence does a presidential advisor have? Huge influence. Because the president trusts his advisor. Huge influence. You have to build trust into that child's life every step of the way. If you want to be a parent that has plenty of influence in your child's future decisions, then you must begin to build it now. You have to take time to address their heart, their soul. Teach them how to make wise, godly decisions by taking stock of the desires, the ruling desires of their own heart, and why those desires, they think, fulfilling them is more important than following what God says. All of that is key. Several years ago when our twins are, on May 1st this year, our twins become 29 years old. Oh my. Just saying that makes me feel decrepit. All right. They're our youngest. The twins are the youngest. They're 29 years old. I remember an occasion several years ago, they went to visit their cousin. And this is when Nintendo had just come out. And we were upstairs talking, and their cousin had a Nintendo. It was down in the basement. And we heard this yelp. We knew something was wrong. I went running down there, got to the bottom of the step, only to see my one boy with his hands wrapped around the neck of the other boy. All right. I saw Cain and Abel being played out right in front of me. All right. So I said, "Stop that." And he dropped his hands. And the other boy, in a self-righteous manner, looked so pleased. Oh, he got caught. I love it. Watch what happens. I'm going to love every bit of this. Now, a behavioristic parent's going to say, I never, ever want to see you doing that ever again. You understand me?
Yeah.
Okay, stop it. Otherwise, there are going to be consequences. Walk away. But if I really want to address that kid's life long term, then I have to plop right down there on the floor, set those little controllers aside, and say to the young man who had, I'm not going to say who did what, in case this tape gets back to them, who had his hands around the neck of the other one, I want you to tell me, why were you willing to murder your brother in your heart?
Well, he was doing things to me on Nintendo, and I didn't want him to do those things.
In other words, you were losing, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't fair. It wasn't fair. He was doing these bad things on the Nintendo.
He was explaining all this stuff. I asked him, what is it in your heart that made you want to murder your brother over Nintendo? I wanted to win. What? I wanted to win. That's right. You wanted to win. And you weren't winning, were you? Out of the corner of my eye, I can see his brother sitting there. Loving every minute of this. All right. Tell me whether or not that desire in your heart was godly or ungodly.
It was ungodly.
That's right. It was ungodly. And then I turned to his brother. He was surprised that I turned to him. He thought he was the victim. You're pretty happy that I just disciplined your brother, aren't you? No, you were smiling. I want you to tell me, what was in your heart that made you smile at the pain of your brother?
Tears started to come. I wanted to see him hurt.
That's right. Just like he wanted to see you hurt. What does the Bible call that? Selfishness. Mm-hmm. So you're just as guilty as he is. What do you need to do?
I don't know what. Yes, you do know.
What do you need to do?
I need to ask my brother to forgive me.
My kids know. They're never supposed to apologize. Nowhere in the Bible does it ever say to apologize. To apologize comes from the Greek term apologia, means to throw up a defense and an excuse for what you're doing. You're never supposed to apologize. You're always supposed to admit your sin and ask for forgiveness. That's right. You're supposed to ask for forgiveness. What did you do wrong? I wanted to see my brother hurt. That's right. So you were just as much in sin as your brother who tried to choke you. Now, it's much easier to be a behavioristic parent, isn't it? To say stop. I mean, when you address a kid's heart, it takes more time. And the only reason we don't do it is because we think that we have more important things to do with our life than deal with these issues. They seem so mundane and stupid to us. But they are the most treasured moments in your parenting. At this particular point, your kids are probably the most teachable than they'll ever be. And you have to buy up those opportunities. Help them see their own hearts. Sometimes we say it like this. Help your children exegete their own hearts. What's going on in there? That's really key. One last point. Harmony in your marriage is vital to effective parenting. One of the main reasons I throw this in is comes straight out of counseling. I realized that the majority of parents who come to me with children who have behavioral problems themselves have a major problem going on in their marriage. Children are barometers. Children and their behavior and their attitudes are barometers of what goes on in the home. And you ask any public school teacher, they'll tell you that. Or any Christian school teacher, they'll tell you that. When a kid comes in unhappy to school one day, what's going on in the home? Oh, mom and dad were fighting. They know this. Children are barometers on what goes on in the home. And in Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 1, it says, better a dry morsel with quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. I used to pastor in an area where we had, around our church was some very, very wealthy homes where if you went up, there was a gate and you had a buzz-in system and you get to the front door and you get met with a butler and da-da-da-da-da type of thing. And I used to counsel some of those families. And time again, kids growing up in those homes would say, I would far rather live in a shack than live in this mansion where mom and dad are constantly fighting. Far rather. Better is a dry morsel with quiet than a house full of feasting than a delicious meal with everything you'd ever want. And there's strife. You don't even want to eat the meal because you're just torn up on the inside. Just torn up. There's conflict between mom and dad. It's interesting that many, I don't say this, secular studies say this, many children manifesting ADD and ADHD-like symptoms come from homes filled with marital strife. Doesn't mean every kid that has ADD there's marital strife. But there are many. And it's also interesting that many Christian families have beautiful houses but not attractive Christian home because of that strife. Beautiful homes are houses, I should say, but ugly homes. Beautiful houses but ugly homes. So you have to look at your marriage. Could it be that the disobedience and rebellion of your children are really symptomatic of a bigger problem that's really going on? The bigger problem has to do with your marriage. I'm really like many of these children. I would not want to live in a house where mom and dad were constantly fighting. You know, I grew up in a home. My mom and dad were both Christian. My father was a pastor, and he genuinely lived out what he taught in the pulpit. So I never saw hardly any disagreements between my mom and dad. I mean, it was an artificial thing. They genuinely loved each other. They did have disagreements, but I never saw them really fighting a lot. And so I remember later on when I got in pastoral ministry and started counseling and working with families, I was shocked about some of the things that went on in homes that called themselves Christians. And I didn't really have or appreciate the full understanding on what impact that had upon the kids because I didn't grow up that way. I didn't grow up that way. But I'm not naive about that anymore. In fact, I have a very, very clear view of this. I would not want to live in a home where mom and dad were constantly fighting. Before we begin to look at the idols of your child's heart, maybe we need to look at idols of our own heart. Maybe it's time that we make a decision and begin to work on these particular problems with your husband or with your wife in a God-honoring way. There are many times that I've said in counseling, listen, I would love to help you with your children, but I can't help your children learn how to respond in a godly way and return them to a home that's constantly in disarray and conflict. I can't do that. I'm trying to teach the kids to obey the Lord, and mom and dad aren't in their relationship. So I have to work on your marriage first. That's what we have to work on. So it's got to start there. If that's not there, then work on that. And then it'll have a... It's amazing on how many of the problems that the kids then are manifesting, which are a reflection of what's happened in that marriage, begin to dry up. They go away once mom and dad resolve those problems. Wow. There's so much more that we need to talk about. And the first thing we're going to do tomorrow is that we're going to talk about training your child from a biblical perspective in terms of their sexual development. What do children need to learn in the culture and society in which we live today? And what do they need to learn about themselves? What's really important? Because our culture today is drowning in sexual overtones. And how can we help them from a biblical perspective? The Bible has a lot to say about that. Let's bow for prayer, shall we? Dear Father, we thank you so much for these men and women and for their desire to work on such important issues as their parenting, their marriage. I pray that as a result of this weekend, you'll do some great things in the homes and the families that are present. And even those that are listening as a result of audio tape. Father, use the truths of the Word of God to really change us first. And then we can turn around and really help our children from the standpoint of wisdom. Help us to be willing to do things your way and not be so indoctrinated by the world. Help us to trust your word. And when our children see that we do that in our personal walk with the Lord, it's going to be much easier for them to do the same. So we commit what we've said to you this evening. We look forward to tomorrow and the rest of what we have to say from Scripture. And this we pray in Christ's name. Amen.